Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Event Industry News Podcast with me, James Dixon, wishing you all a very good morning, afternoon, or evening, whenever or wherever you tune into today's podcast from. And never more so apt, as I say, than when we bring one of our friends from across the pond on to the Event Industry News Podcast. Always juggling the time differences. It's later on in the afternoon, but it's first thing on a Monday morning for my guest joining the podcast today. I'm delighted to say that talking about FinTech Meetup, probably somebody diving into a bit of Money 2020 and finding out a little bit more about these fantastic events, is a guest who is a first-time guest on the Event Industry News Podcast, but who I'm certain is going to bring us a great episode today, some great insightful content into their life in the events industry. I'm delighted to say that joining me from across in the USA is Sanjeeb Kalita. Sanjeeeb, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, James. It's wonderful to be here.
And I'm sure you said Virginia you are at the moment.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Fairfax, Virginia.
Fairfax, Virginia. And for anybody who's been, you know, to that sort of area of the USA, a beautiful part of the USA, and dare I say it, shares sort of, you know, certainly seasonal similarities with the sort of weather and climate that we're used to over here in the UK.
That's true, and it's good right now, but I think in February I'm going to be wanting some more sunshine.
No, absolutely, the cold weather is upon both of us, Sanjeeb. We had a very mild Christmas over here in the UK, New Year. It was unseasonably warm, if you can call it that, and now the warnings are up and about. You know, things are drying up and things are getting cold over here at the moment. So this is exactly as we would expect it for January. And on the subject of January, I guess a time of year where everybody is sort of deep into the planning side of things. You know, we come back from the festive season and, you know, from a little bit break over Christmas and New Year period. And I dare say, is it the same for you over there as it is for many of the event organisers that I've spoken to in the UK, where this is very much a period of time where you are analysing what you'd like to achieve this year, what you'd like to do, looking at calendars, looking at diaries, scheduling everything?
Yeah, very much so. And I think for us, it's doubly working, you know, for the FinTech Meetup team, it's actually even more so because our event is in March, beginning of March. So, you know, about about 60 days away. So as you know how crazy it gets right before the event itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you mentioned FinTech Meetup. Before we get into the real sort of details of that, let's take a little bit of a step back, if I may, Sanjeeb, and just for the benefit of our podcast listeners tuning in today, a little bit about yourself. Tell us who you are and what your journey in the events industry has been up to now.
Yeah, I would probably describe myself as an accidental events professional. I started off as a computer chip designer at Intel. Many years ago. In fact, I designed a programming language that Intel is still using 30 years later and helped launch a graphics chip division, so very techie. And then went to business school, decided to go to banking and worked at Citibank for about 9 years and managed a $30 billion banking portfolio, and then left in 2010 to work on startups. And I've been doing startups the last 14 years. So worked on a fintech startup that was acquired by Google. So I was at Google for a year, and then actually left to build a fintech conference called Money 2020. And, you know, back then, Google was the number one company people wanted to work for. And, you know, the CEO of Money 2020, you know, tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, you know what, you want to help me build this thing? And people thought I was crazy at the time because Google was the number one company people wanted to work for. And I was working on Google Wallet, which was the top, most interesting project in the fintech industry. And I left and joined Money 2020, when I joined, it was four of us in a room calling our friends, and we grew it to, one of the largest and most important conferences in the industry worldwide, and really appreciated the benefit of what events can do, especially if done right and if done differently. And I was there for 10 and a half years, and actually recently, left to join FinTech Meetup, towards the end of last year, last November, and I think it's a similar journey here. we're using technology to really make events more effective.
And when it comes to a sector like the financial sector, it's a huge, I mean, it goes without saying, it's hugely competitive. But ultimately, when you're dealing with people's money, whether that be commercial money, whether that be investment money, whether that be just personal, you know, but day-to-day banking for the guy on the street, you're dealing with a sector and an industry there that ultimately has to serve the public in the best way possible. Mm. And so I guess in that respect, it's vital to the industry that it gets the opportunity to meet up and discuss collectively, as well as outside of that, having a very, very competitive marketplace that they work within.
Exactly. Also, you know, sort of piling onto that, with increased digitization, even, for example, with the pandemic and, you know, needing to do things remotely, you know, rather than going to a branch, you needed to do it on your phone or your computer. You know, how new retail experiences are embedding financial services and loans and insurance into things that we do every day. I think it actually increases the ecosystem of people that need to know about what's going on with money, and that's also, I think, part of the reason why. I think these types of events are important. Actually, if I go back to, you know, 2012, when we had the first Money 2020, I think Anil and I, we were talking about, sort of the industry and where things were going. And one of the things that he said, which I will repeat the history, it's like, you know, it used to be that when you were at a cocktail event, one of the quickest ways to have people run away from you was to say you worked in payments or financial services.
Yeah.
Everybody ran away from you. And then, you know, around that time, 2012, like, you know, we noticed that if you were at a cocktail party and you mentioned financial services or payments, people would, you know, lean in and want to learn more. And, you know, that was a bit of the clue that, what was before a very much a niche topic was becoming more interesting to a broader audience.
Sure. And just, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, you used the word pandemic, and how, this sounds like a really brutal question, how much of a positive impact did the pandemic have on the fintech industry, in the sense that it drove a lot of places and a lot of transaction providers to start using digital and contactless payments? Cash businesses that were historically cash businesses, bars, restaurants, small sandwich shops, suddenly overnight had to transform and stop taking cash and be able to take card payments. And I'm guessing that A, that had a huge impact on the fintech industry, and B, post-pandemic, probably had quite a positive impact on your events.
Yeah, I absolutely. I think you have hit it on the head. You know, one of the core drivers is the electronification of payments and financial services. And because once you have it in an electronic form, then you have the data, you could do all kinds of interesting things with that. And that's much more flexible, much more, you know, you can personalize it, really brings a quantum leap forward in terms of the user experience. And so the pandemic did accelerate that. On the flip side, it's sort of like with all things, there's sort of a natural up and down. There's a quick pull forward, but it also, like, if you're not careful, like you could pull forward things that didn't necessarily need to be pulled forward.
Sure.
But in general, it has been a huge boon to our industry, you know, to the events industry. And, you know, sort of going towards the pandemic as well, that obviously had a huge impact on the events industry, on live events, and, you know, not being able, you know, limitations on travel, limitations on being able to meet in person, you know, limit. I remember, one event where we had to test, about 4,000 people every day, and which was like not a fun thing for neither us nor them.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this can nod, in appreciation and empathy of that particular circumstance. We ran an event over here, the Event Tech Live event that we own and look after, and the first live event post pandemic, even though technically the UK was out of all of its restrictions, we still had quite a rigorous process involved to ensure really that people felt safe when they were going back to the events. It was more a consciousness thing. We didn't have to stick to any sort of restrictions, but we wanted to, and there was difficulty in that in itself. The sort of numbers that you were referencing there, 4,000 people a day, I mean, that's vast. That's a significant sort of undertaking to I suppose have to learn, A, in a very short period of time, and B, for what would actually be a finite period of time as well.
Yes, exactly. With the pandemic, there was a lot of interest in virtual events and virtual meetings, and because of that hole left by the inability to meet in person. And so FinTech Meetup initially had started off with a virtual technology, for virtual meetings in terms of understanding who you are, what you're interested in, and then doing double opt-in meetings. What happened was that, and they were quite successful at that. And then once live events were able to happen again in 2023, FinTech Meetup applied that same technology for a live event. And I was there as an attendee. I remember I was in a room with 1,000 tables, and every 15 minutes, it was 2,000 people switching seats. And this was all based on digital information and personalization. And I was like, this is I was blown away, to be perfectly honest. And I was I really saw this as the future of how events need to go or should go. Because I'm sure you can appreciate, one of the biggest benefits of an event, obviously you have the content, you have the events and the parties and things like that. But one of the core things is meeting the right people, talking to people, catching up, if we can use new technologies to make that more efficient, to make that better, I'm a big believer in that.
Well, absolutely, and I would say likewise, because I've had the very good fortune of being involved in an event tech show for the last 10 years, Event Tech Live, and really in the UK, we were the first, and we still are the only, show that actually just puts a sole focus on tech suppliers for the events industry. It's a trade show for the trade, for the events industry. And through that, I've seen, yes, companies come and go, but other platforms go from, one or two people to several hundred people working for them, as that whole sector has grown. And we rely so heavily on it now, whether we think that we are using event tech or not. Anybody organizing an event now, even if you use Google Suite, if you use Google Docs and Google Forms and Google Slides and Google Sheets to help manage your small conference, you're using a technology platform to help manage that. And ultimately, it's making our lives easier, because we have ways and means of analyzing data and looking at, analytics in a completely different way. And I suppose what this is all bringing me to is bringing it back to the very start of your career. And when you look back at chip design and working for a company like Intel, and having that knowledge of that particular area, do you find that makes it easier now in a role running an event, and with the amount of tech that's used within your event, to understand what suppliers work for you, which ones don't? Does it help to get through the minefield of finding event tech suppliers for your events a little bit easier, given your own background?
Yeah, I think it does help. I also want to make sure that, and I'm sure you'd agree with this too, it's like It's easy to get caught up in the tech, but if it's not solving a genuine problem, then what's the point of it, right? So I think it is an understanding of the technology coupled with a deep understanding of the problems you're trying to solve, the business problems, and so with technology, there's obviously an evolution, and so there's some technologies that I look at, I'm like, okay, well, this is interesting for right now, but where is this going to go? Just for the sake of discussion, like you're dealing with a technology that only works with a laptop, but obviously you have mobility, you have, and so what would the user interface be like with a smaller screen, with quicker times, or even edge computing types of things. So it does help, but I also want to, for myself, I want to make sure that I don't lose sight of the business problem I'm trying to solve.
Absolutely, and ultimately, yeah, comes down to user experience with stuff like that. I think, you know, I've seen some complicated and potentially well thought out event tech platforms that actually prompt more questions from us as a user, as an organizer, than provide answers or provide solutions, if that makes sense. Because sometimes it doesn't need to do a million things, it just needs to do three or four things really, really well.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. And in some cases, I think back on that first registration system that I helped put together, create for our first event. And it was like, now looking back at, like, it was a horrible user experience. It was, not quite green screen, just about. And obviously, you know, that's gotten much better. But then you're absolutely right. There's some things that, like, if it solves a problem, and it is robust, and you know, I think you can do a lot with things that, you know, would be surprising to most.
I'm going to turn the conversation, if I may, to sort of maybe some of the more operational aspects. You mentioned that, you know, really the start of the year for you is really the final, you know, the final home straight in the run-up to your event. It's the 3rd until the 6th of March, I think, this year.
Yes.
At the Venetian in Las Vegas.
Exactly, yes.
And just let's start on venue, first of all, and location. Has FinTech Meetup always been Las Vegas-based? And if so, has it always been in the Venetian, and what led you there?
Yeah, so we had the first FinTech Meetup in 2023 at the Aria in Las Vegas.
Yep.
And we moved it to the Venetian this year because the growth in the event, and this actually calls upon our history with the past event. Like, so with Money 2020 in 2012, we had 2,000 people. The next year, 4,000. Then the third year, almost 8,000. And so the first 3 years were at the Aria. And we felt that with even with a conference of 4,000 people, it was quite comfortable there. Mm. But then that last year, the Aria was not large enough, and so the following year we wound up moving to the Venetian. And so I've personally had positive experiences working at the Venetian since 2015. Mm-hmm. So, 8 years quite a large space, and a lot of potential that you could do. And it's also a space where we can grow into it as the event grows, because, for example, this year we're expecting 5,000 people. So that's going to need a pretty significant space.
Absolutely. And we were something that we were asked, as Event Tech Live, when we did our first Event Tech Live USA, which was in Las Vegas last year, mm-hmm. was a lot of people in the UK ask me, well, why Las Vegas for a business event? Aren't there a lot of distractions? Yeah. Doesn't have a negative impact on people going to do business. You know, you want them in a sort of a refined business environment. You know, isn't Las Vegas counterintuitive to that? For anybody sort of listening to this in the UK, Europe maybe, who don't quite understand why events like this work so well in Las Vegas, give us sort of some of the headlines as to why, you know, it's such a popular destination for these types of business events.
Sure, absolutely. So I'd say, first of all, when you fly in folks into a destination city like Las Vegas, they're there for the event. For example, if we were to have the meeting, let's say in London, there'd be thousands of attendees who would come in for a limited period of time and probably go back to their offices, maybe in the afternoon or vice versa. And so you don't have the full attention of the attendees. So in a place like Las Vegas, you have their full attention. They're there for a fintech meetup. They're there to meet. They're there to engage. I think there's also the sense of neutral territory. Because this is not everyone is there in different capacities, but from different places. So it's not like you feel like you're we work with. We have attendees from many, that are frenemies, competitors, and let's just say like Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discover, like they're all in the same space, but they're also, if you have the level playing field where they can all meet, that's also that helps meetings go much more effectively as well.
Now, again, it's an interesting point that you raise, because this is applicable not just to large scale events like yours, but right down to smaller events is the subject of travel. And you're right, we've all experienced shows or events where when the location is geographically close to where the audience are coming from, you do get people who either turn up late or leave early because they think, well, great, it's on my doorstep. I'll go in for a couple of hours, have a quick scoot round, see who's there, see what's happening, and then go back. They're never really fully committed to the show because they're really just going in there because it's convenient for them.
Yes.
And if it's convenient, they're just coming in for a couple of hours. I think arguably you're never going to get people's full attention and full interaction with the event. Arguably that's probably the best explanation I've heard as to why Las Vegas is such good, because like you said, particularly in that industry, I'm guessing you're going to get a lot of people from the East Coast, from places like New York, Washington, Boston, Chicago, probably big financial center there, no doubt Los Angeles, lots of financial players in that marketplace, probably I would guess a small percentage of your delegates and your audience actually come from the area.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, even in past events, like we've had like I'd say even 20-30% international as well too, and that's the benefit of a flagship city like Las Vegas, which is a bit of a tourist destination as well, because even when you're trying to attract someone internationally, if you're telling them to even if it's like in the middle of nowhere. If they're there, they're going to, okay, what do I do once I'm there? Whereas if they're in some place like, let's say Las Vegas or, a tourist type of destination, that's the additional carrot, if you will, that if you come there, okay, I could spend a day afterwards or before and just explore. And so that also helps with international travel as well.
And it's interesting, and it might sound, on the first glance, it might be a boring thing to sort of notice and analyze. But from our perspective, being based over in the UK, geographically, we're very small. People can hop on a plane or even a train and potentially travel from one end of the country or one end of the UK to the other in the same day and then go back again.
Yeah.
Which is very, very different, as we know, for the USA. And because of that, I think that then changes the programming in terms of the calendar schedule for you. So over here we would never really have an event that starts on a Sunday or even a Monday. We would generally start our trade events possibly Monday, but mostly Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday are the key days, because people can travel from around the country first thing in the morning or late in the evening the day before. when you're dealing with a bigger geographical area like you are, I noticed that your event effectively starts on a Sunday, which I'm presuming is to give people time to fly in from,
yes,
from wherever they're flying in from.
Exactly. And that was, but probably a little bit of learning as well too, from our perspective. The first event that I worked on, we had a, let's just say like a networking party on that Sunday, but we were like, okay, well, a lot of people came in and they actually came in early, you know, why not, you know, provide them more? And we had the space. And so that following event, we had some content, and ironically enough, like the Sunday days wound up being the most attend, you know, the people were so engaged. And when you have a multi-day event, you come in with full energy and you're ready to, you soak in things like a sponge. And then by day three, the sponge is a bit worn out. So it was a bit of a learning for us that we've sort of adapted to, if you will. Like we didn't, what you're saying about the Sunday was not the initial plan when I first worked on my first event.
Sure. Yeah. And the actual operations of an event this size within a venue that size as well. What is the combination and the balance between, I suppose, smaller, what we would call breakout sessions, mm-hmm. and larger keynote sessions where you want all of the audience and attendees to be together? Has that taken some refinement, and how carefully are you adjusting that on a year to year basis?
Yeah, it's always, one of the toughest things is to figure out each year, like what is going to be keynote worthy, what is interesting enough at that moment to draw, several thousand attendees to like just spend, to sacrifice their time. And I think that our view is always like we view our attendees' time as sacred. That is a gift to us, that and we don't want to waste it. So like, how do we maximize their return on time? And like I said, it's like, what is, there's some things that should be broadly discussed, but then there's a lot of conversations, a lot of topics that might be more, for a specific community, or for example, in FinTech Meetup, even on a one-to-one basis. And I think that is taking personalization. A lot of events talk about personalization and digitization, but FinTech Meetup, we're actually trying to apply that. We're applying that in the user experience. Let's just say that we have a big conversation about the macro environment, and that there are certain implications that are going to be relevant for 5,000 people. But then, say if, I am an event organizer, event technology person, working in, let's say like B2B medium scale events. So what that macro conversation will be different than for, let's say like a very small scale local type of event. If we can figure out, have all of these conversations happen at the same venue, I think that will maximize the time for the attendee, that will enable them to leave with the best knowledge, the right contacts, and the right conversations to help them be successful in the year ahead.
And in terms of the content, just looking at the website for this year, 175 speakers, I think over four, if I'm right, four tracks,
yeah,
of content. You've got fast track, and then you've, yeah, got three other tracks, segmented by particular types within the sector. That seems to me like a mammoth task to manage 175 speakers. over, you know, a fairly short period of time. How much operationally, how much time operationally is taken up in advance in managing and planning and getting all the information that's needed to those speakers? And how important is it from your perspective that they have, you know, clear briefs, that they know everything that they can expect on the day, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a lot of work. When I first got into events, I was like amazed at, like, because, you know, as an attendee, you sort of take a lot of things for granted. And then once you actually create it, you're like, oh my gosh, this is a lot of work. And it does take, you know, for the better part of a year to start thinking about, you know, what you need to do, who, you know, at least like, and then there's some speakers that you need to lock in well in advance. There's others that, might happen a bit, you know, so, you know, a few weeks before the event, but it is a significant planning process. And also, you know, there's so much change, you know, and like, we want to make sure that when the event happens, we keep, you know, we have some things set aside that like are unable to, you know, address like some of the issues that are most present. Because like, if we go back to January of 2023, what we thought was going to be important now, some of it is true, some of it's not. Mm. And so we want to manage that balance well too. So there is definitely a bit of an art to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And is the process for your event a case of you headhunting speakers who you think would be relevant to the types of sessions you want to put on, or is there an application process? Is it a mixture of the two?
It is a mixture of the two, and also like we're the team, we have we have a lot of contacts in the industry too, so it is a bit of mixture. And there's several times when we'll get an inbound request that like we hadn't even thought of, and like, this is actually perfect. Other times we'll hear something, and I think like one other thing is that, you know, sort of getting back to being mindful of our attendees' time, we want to make sure that the content is something that is new, something that is interesting, that is relevant. And sometimes we might get in an inbound with a discussion topic that is maybe a bit flat. And but with the speakers, we're like, okay, we can maybe refocus this conversation into something that is very interesting. And so there's even with something that we will accept, like as is, like we do wind up putting our touch upon it as well.
Yeah. And sort of leading on from there is the balance to strike. When you have the subject matter that you will undoubtedly have as content at your event, it could be quite intensive. Without assuming anything, it could be quite intensive. And for people who really want to get the most out of the event, they will be concentrating hard for a period of 7-8 hours over the duration of each particular day. How important is it then for you as an organizer to offer them, you know, lighter networking opportunities, drinks, receptions, meals, entertainment? Does that form a critical part of the planning process to make sure that they've got some good downtime, so that they're, you know, well, you know, so that they're structured in a way that they get the most out of the daytime stuff, but can relax and switch off?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, so, you know, I think it was like year two or three of the prior event. We put RFID tags onto our attendee badges so that we could sort of keep track of like how many sessions people went to and how many they did not. I don't remember the exact numbers, but let's just say like 10% didn't go to a single session. And I was a bit like surprised by that. I'm like, okay, they spent a decent amount of money on this ticket, and you know, they'd rather do all these other things rather than go to a single session. Then you had on the other side, you had like 10% that went to as many as they could. And then that in that middle, you got, let's say an average, I think back then it was maybe like 6-7 sessions. that they went to. So they're, you know, those are folks that, you know, they have an agenda of, as far as what they want to learn, but it's also a case where, like, if you're just in sessions for seven straight hours, what your mind can actually absorb might not be that 7 or 8 hours.
Sure. Yeah.
And so it might be a case where you listen to something and then you talk to someone about it, and then that helps reinforce it, or maybe disputes what you've just heard. So it makes it more relevant. So that's why I think it's like, going too content heavy is not necessarily the right solution, because, you know, like it is, you need to be mindful of us as human beings, as biological beings as well.
Yeah. And there's, I mean, I forget exactly what it is, but I remember, you know, going back to being in school, you know, there was always this element that, you know, repetition is how we retain information.
Yeah.
Or change habits. And I suppose it's not just about giving people downtime at events like this, but as you rightly point out, the networking that you would do in the late afternoon, evening time is actually an opportunity for people to discuss on a less formal level what they've heard during the day. And by discussing it, they're actually going to retain that information a little bit better.
Yes.
Rather than waking up the next day and going to another 7 hours of content, they'll retain stuff that is of real interest to them.
Absolutely. And sort of even getting back to your question about Vegas, I think Vegas is also very well suited for, you know, after five or six, whenever the event is, you know, the content sort of stops, you have all these networking events, and where you can reinforce, you can also discuss and do counterpoints. And I think that is, I think that, yeah, that's also a huge benefit. Like, so I've been to events in places where you didn't have the easy venues to network afterwards, and mm-hmm. and you listen to something during the day, and then it's sort of like you said, you're not able to reinforce it in the evening, and so I think that impact of what was just said is not taken to its full potential.
Yeah, absolutely. We're getting towards the end of time on today's episode, Sanjeev, but I'm keen to make sure that people can find out a little bit more about the event, about you, you know, to continue this conversation outside of today's podcast. So before we start wrapping up today, tell our listeners a little bit about how they can find out more about FinTech Meetup and about yourself.
Sure, absolutely. So our website is fintechmeetup.com. FinTech Meetup, MEETUP.com, and you know, so you can sign up for the email list just to keep updated with latest announcements. Definitely, you know, think it will be an amazing event. You know, for me personally, I'm quite active on LinkedIn, so you know, definitely reach out to me there if you want.
And I would say on the subject of LinkedIn and on Sanjeev's LinkedIn, listeners, two of the best photos I've seen on LinkedIn in a while. A great profile picture on there that is a sort of, I guess, a meme, an animated version, and a brilliant cover photo of you clearly celebrating something. I don't know if it looks like you've just been announced an award win or something like that.
Yes, yes, I had just won an award, and this was in the UK, and obviously, like, I was the emotional American on stage after learning that I won an award. So
the world needs more emotional Americans. There's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes it offers a great contrast to some of the British winners that I've seen at awards many times. Shuffle up to the stage, collect the award, and shuffle off. Emotional Americans is never a bad thing, Sanjeev. It's been great to speak to you today. Thanks very much. The time has flown past on today's episode, but it's always a good sign when we've got a great guest on, and I suddenly glance at the clock and realise that we're getting towards the end of time on the episode. It's been great to speak to you, and I suppose it would be foolish of me and remiss of me not to say the very best of luck for the event this year. As we said, FinTech Meetup is 3rd to the 6th of March, so a matter of weeks away, I guess, now at the start. So yeah, very best of luck with it, and thanks for joining us today, Sanjeev.
Thank you very much, James. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
And a few words of mention, I suppose, for our very own outlets before we wrap up today's episode. If you are listening to this on your podcast platform, please do make sure that you head over to eventindustrynews.com to check out the latest news, features, special supplements that are available on the Event Industry News website. Of course, you can also find there the A to Z supplier directory. If you work in the events industry and you're looking for a supplier, product, or a service, the chances are you will find it on the A to Z supplier directory within the eventindustrynews.com website, where you can also watch video versions of all of our podcasts. Of course, you may have started your journey there today already and be watching today's podcast via the website. If you have done that, thank you very much for tuning in and watching today's episode. Please also don't forget to go in the opposite direction and find the Event Industry News podcast wherever you get your audio podcasts from, and make sure that you subscribe to receive the weekly updates when the new episodes drop. Which brings us to the end of today's episode, and my thanks once again to my guest today, Sanjeev Kalita from FinTech Meetup. Good luck with this year's show, Sanjeev. It's been great to have on the podcast. Hope to get you back on again in the future to tell us about the developing world of the fintech industry and the show itself. See how things progress over the next few years. But for now, that's the end of today's episode, and I'll see you next week on the Event Industry News podcast. Goodbye, everybody.